y'all. Welcome back to the Don't Mom Alone podcast. I'm your host, Heather McFadden, and this is the place where I get to walk alongside you and connect you with people and resources so you know that you don't mom alone. In this episode number 572, we're welcoming back to the show our favorites, David Thomas and Sissy Goff.
We are seeing more parents than ever before abdicate to experts. And David and I would say really strongly right now that we think experts are making things worse, that some of the things a lot of experts are saying to parents are only increasing anxiety, are only making them doubt themselves. And so we are telling parents, we want you to listen to two voices. Don't Mom Alone certainly being a place that you go, but pick two voices that you trust in the parenting space. And they need to be voices that help you give yourself more grace and help you trust your intuition, because God speaks to you about your child, not to the experts. And you are the only expert when it comes to your child.
I first had the privilege of chatting with David Thomas over 10 years ago when he came on the show to help guide me with parenting boys. Oh, what a difference when I had a 4, 6, 8, and 10-year-old to today. And even before we hit record on this call, he and Sissy were helping guide me and just sitting with me about some teen boy issues that we're walking through. And I'm just incredibly grateful for their voices in my life, their kindness, their friendship, and honored to get to share them with you today. We're going to focus our conversation today on their newest book called Capable. It is a New York Times bestseller. Congrats, David and Sissy. The subtitle is How to Teach Your Kids the Strengths, Skills, and Strategies to Build Resilience. And I want you to know that as a parent, I sometimes don't want to listen to these kinds of episodes because I don't want to feel worse about my parenting, like, oh, the reason my kid won't take risks or self-regulate is my problem. And I think that their hope and goal is to infuse confidence into you as a parent to kind of dial down all those voices that are telling you so many different things that you need to do and to help you step by step kind of lead your kids into a more capable state. What are some actual things you can do? What are some habits you can build in? What are some strengths you could help guide them in? And I just want you to know, if you're navigating anxiety, motivation struggles, or the pressure to get it right, you're going to find this episode to be both practical and deeply encouraging. So let's get right to it. Here we go. David and Sissy, welcome back. I mean, I tried to count how many times you've been on. It's at least 8 already.
Wow.
10 years.
Wow.
10 years. David
was
the first.
10 years of friendship.
I know. A decade.
So honored.
A decade.
My kids were 10, 8, 6, and 4. Now it's a totally different story. I mean, y'all know. Yeah. Between the teen years and the little kids years, stressful in different ways, but I'm thankful to have had you guys as guides and all of that. And if y'all haven't ever heard David and Sissy on the show, where have you even been? Maybe you're a new listener, but please go look in the archives. David and Sissy are amazing counselors, and they both are executive directors of Daystar Counseling in Tennessee. And today, I guess a year ago, we talked about helping kids do hard things and strong-willed kids and growing through failure based on your children's books that you just launched. And now you have an actual like guide, I'm going to hold it up, called Capable, subtitle, How to Teach Your Kids the Strengths, Skills, and Strategies to Build Resilience. And I feel like it was about 8 years ago, I was in Nashville and I was with a group of moms, and that was a conversation that came up. They're like, we feel, we've always been told kids are resilient, and it doesn't seem like that's our experience anymore. Wow. What do we do about that? And that was the first time I'd ever heard someone say it out loud. And you guys have witnessed it. You witness it every day in your counseling center, this drop off. And I don't think many parents are unfamiliar with the anxiety crisis, the depression. But tell us why you were like, okay, after all these years, is it 30 plus years of counseling, that you're like, okay, we have to write this book.
Mm. Well, really exactly what you just described. I mean, we have been concerned for quite a few years now about the mental health among kids. And we know there's this crisis happening, anxiety, depression, so many things that are impacting kids to a greater degree than ever before. Mm-hmm. And what we have seen really, I mean, Heather, it is continuing to ramp up. I mean, I would say in the last year and a half, but I feel it more and more every single day is right behind this mental health crisis has been what we would really consider a crisis of capability. And the amount of conversations we're having with parents whose kids won't walk into a school building, who won't try out for a sport that they don't automatically know they're going to be perfect at the first time they do it, who won't reach out to a new friend, who won't text an already established friend, and the amount of really boys and girls who won't get their driver's license, who say, I'm not ready. And I think we have watched it and been grieved by it and have been talking about what does that mean for these kids when they hit adulthood that aren't learning what it looks like to do hard things. And so 30 plus years in, we're ready. We're ready to start saying it loudly. And how can we make a difference and help these kids? Because they need the skills.
Well, and like I said, my kids span about 6 years. And I see a difference between my oldest two and my younger two. And they're not that different generationally, but it is a big difference in their willingness to get together with friends in person.
Right.
Or like there's a group chat and I'm not a parent who loves group chats. And I'm like, why aren't you joining in the conversation? You haven't said anything. Why haven't you responded to this text? Like exactly what you're saying. Yes. And this is a very confident child prior. So So you're saying that it is this capability crisis. Can you kind of define capable for us? Like, what do you mean by that? And how is it different from confidence?
Good question.
Great question. So the working definition we talk a lot about is that capable kids have practiced coping and learned competence for life's challenges.
Okay, break that down.
So think about the practice coping part. And it's interesting when you were talking about that conversation with that group of moms, what stood out to me is, and I think this is something so important for parents to hear, like there were built-in opportunities for the three of us throughout our growing up that don't exist for kids anymore. And so it's not that our parents were just knocking it out of the park in all moments and parents
were great parents and we were terrible.
It's not that at all. But, you know, we were talking about yesterday, just when we went to the doctor's office or the dentist office, like there were those really boring highlights magazines on the table. And that was your only option for navigating boredom.
Yes.
The only option. And in the summers, parents sent us outside and said, go ride your bike, find your friends, come back when it's dark. These built-in opportunities that existed because the world was different.
Yeah.
That we have buffers in place now for kids. The very story you just shared, it's like, I don't have to go out and find my friends and have an awkward conversation with their mom and dad when I knock on the door and ask if Joe can play right now. Like all the skill development that was happening within that, that doesn't exist for kids in the same way now. So there's less opportunity. And then you layer that with what Sissy just described, less desire to risk and put myself out there. And, you know, what's important to note back to that conversation you had with moms is I do very much, we talk about this, I think resilience is in kids. I think it exists, but, you know, it's like the bicep muscle, like it's in my body, but if I don't work it, you know, it's not working for me. And so that resilience, that capability has to be developed, and it's only developed in practice, which is the difference between competence and confidence. We can't just praise our kids and they wake up confident. We can't, though I wish it were possible, just give them a gummy at 10 years old and they wake up confident the next morning. Like confidence is built through competence, and competence happens when I do reps of hard, uncomfortable things that trigger discomfort over and over and over. Yeah. You know, it's in keeping with that analogy I just used about muscles, like they don't get stronger unless I'm working them. And then when I work them, they hurt. Mm-hmm. It's the growing pains that is a part of this experience for kids, no different than their physical development.
I'm grateful I can bring conversations like this to you thanks to sponsors like Branch Basics. Now, David and Sissy have been talking about the rise in anxiety in our culture and the challenge of parents to feel all of this pressure to get it right. And I know for me, one area that I've been trying to clean up is all the toxins in our home. And what I'm thankful for is we live in a time when so many brands exist, including this female-founded brand that is redefining transparency and eliminating toxins from our homes, especially the products that we're using to clean our homes. So many conventional products look clean. They may even smell clean. They may even say natural, but they still contain ingredients that are linked to hormone disruption, skin irritation, respiratory issues. And a lot of US companies, if you didn't know, aren't even required to disclose all the ingredients. So you could be spraying and washing chemicals you would never intentionally bring into your home. But Branch Basics changes that. There's one formula, no mystery ingredients, no unnecessary fillers. Spring cleaning isn't just about decluttering, it's about upgrading what you allow in your home. I love the simplicity of Branch Basics. I love that they have one concentrate. It is made from plant and mineral-based ingredients. And from that concentrate, I can make window washing cleaner, bathroom cleaner, counter cleaner, even laundry detergent. And here's the really, really good news. Branch Basics is now available everywhere you shop at Target, Target.com, Amazon, and of course, BranchBasics.com. Tossing the toxins has never been more convenient. And for anyone grabbing the premium starter kit, you can get 15% off at branchbasics.com with our special code DMA for Don't Mom Alone. Just use code DMA for 15% off the premier starter kit at branchbasics.com. After you purchase, when they ask where you heard about them, please make sure to mention our show. Well, I think it's good you said it is an environmental thing that parents can't, it's not necessarily a parenting thing, but we have to be aware that it is the reality. I think with this conversation, I want to make sure moms who are listening don't turn it off because they're like the guilt and then the shame of I'm just the worst, shut down their own capability and like empowerment. Like I want these moms to feel empowered that it's not this like, oh, well, you have this anxiety crisis and it's all, I can't do anything about it. And just throw your hands up, like avoid it. You guys talk about that, like the avoidance, the escape. We all are feeling like, well, the world's just going to hell in a handbasket and, you know, I can't do anything. Like even in that environment, you know, your subtitle, you can teach strengths and skills and strategies to fight back against what that environment doesn't allow for. It's just, it's like, I don't know, it's just a little exhausting as a parent.
Yes.
But I think as parents, we want our kids to be successful often, or there can be a whole culture and maybe not within Christian culture. I would hope the Christian culture, it's a kingdom focus, but I do interact with non-Christian parents a lot too. And there is this success narrative of like, if I get them in the right private school and then I get them in the right sport and then they're the head of that sport and then they get in the right college, like that success narrative, you guys talk about maybe sturdy might be the better narrative than these success. Talk to me about that. Like that can be countercultural in some environments, Dallas, absolutely. Nashville, maybe.
Yes.
How do you help parents kind of grieve that high achieving concept and envision more like a resilient child?
Yes. I met with a mom recently who had, it was the season to apply for school, and she had applied to several private schools in Nashville, which it is nuts.
It's nuts here, girl. I just did it.
Yes.
I just did it.
It's so much.
When your eighth grader's on a wait list, what is happening?
Right. Yes. Yeah. And this mom came in, and I mean, as soon as we sat down, her mascara had covered her entire face. I mean, she just was sobbing. And she said, we applied to three schools. She didn't get into any. I don't even know what to do. I'm so shocked. She's cried so much. And she just, I mean, it was like the Charlie Brown projectile tears, you know. And then she said, and yes, she did finally get into one and kept crying just as hard about the experience and said she was on a wait list for another. And I wanted so much for her to feel heard and to for her to know that I certainly understand the pressure, because you're right. It is crazy. A mom said to me at an event one time, the mania that is parenting today. And that's the exact truth. And this success culture is making it so much worse. And then I tried to really gently say, it's really good for your daughter to have experienced this. It is so hard and so painful. And the kids I worry about the most right now are the ones who haven't experienced failure, who haven't hit hard things, who haven't had hurdles in their lives. Because just like David talked about, they're building those muscles and the muscles hurt. And this was so painful for this little girl. And she got to go through it with a mom who was empathetic and with her and supportive. She got to learn skills. And now when the next no comes, which we know no's are going to come a lot in our lifetime, she's already gotten this really important rep with a lot of scaffolding around her. And we're not preparing kids for no's when we're driving towards success. We're not preparing them for life, really.
Yeah. That resilience lasts longer than relief or rescue.
Yes.
Because, I mean, yes, there is the, you know, you didn't get in or you didn't make the team. There's also, this is really hard. These friends are really hard. The school is really hard. So we probably should try a different school, or we should try a different church, or we should try, like, let's change the environment so that it's not hard. And that's a form of relief or rescue. Talk about the small, like, moments where we as parents could maybe, we're robbing kids of the chance to build that muscle you were talking about. We're robbing them the chance of, it may not be the big thing like the school thing. It may just be like a moment. What's a moment that you guys interact with that we could maybe build that muscle?
A great question. You know, we talk a lot about the importance of not only kids navigating discomfort, but us as parents learning to navigate our kids' discomfort. Yeah. Or else I think the instinct to rescue will stay consistent, because none of us want to see the kids we love struggle in the world. That's not intuitive. It doesn't feel natural. It doesn't feel good. But to Sissy's point, it is necessary. And, you know, I had a dad say to me recently, fourth grade son talks all the time about wanting to play in the NFL, but he won't try out for flag football. Mm-hmm. And I know that if I take him for tryouts, he's probably going to fall apart. And so we just talked through what would it look like if you did take him to do the work you'd need to do to navigate the fall apart. If you believe this would be a great context for growth, and that might not be the right context for every kid, but he had a strong sense that it would. And obviously is necessary if he wants to play in the NFL, that he play a little football somewhere along the way. And so what would it look like in those moments when the only quote unquote right decision feels like just pull them out or don't take them in the first place, and moving them toward those hard things?
Yeah, those little nudges that you as the parent are like, I know if they just would try this, just try it. It feels really hard. I actually heard an NFL player talk the other night at an event, and he was saying how being in the NFL built his muscle, not just physical muscle, but his resistance to failure and how you have to get back up. So no matter what happened on Sunday, you got to be back and ready to go by Wednesday. Whatever criticism you got, whatever mistakes you made, whether they're very public and replayed on the tapes that you look at on Monday. And he said that kind of rhythm of Sunday to Sunday of failure and getting back up makes him very successful in his business. Mm. And I think that what I struggle with my own kids, especially, you know, I know this audience has grown with me, so we all kind of have teenagers and college kids, is I can maybe take them to the flag football thing when they're 8, but making a 14-year-old sign up and audition for a musical or something, it feels like I can only go so far. Like I can't, he won't learn the song and sing it if it's not in him. And how do you internally motivate them? That feels like the imbalance. Like I'm very willing to do the pushing or the challenging and the supporting, like you guys talk about, challenge and support. But that can only go so far when you get to the teenagers.
You're exactly right.
What are your tips?
It's so hard. I mean, I do think we want them to have more agency and more of a voice in the teenage years. And so things like hey, you are going to participate in at least one extracurricular activity a week.
Okay, how do you even enforce that? That feels like, do you not get a phone unless you participate?
That's what I was going to say.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's tying something to it to say,
you don't get the car or you don't get, yeah.
Yep. It can be, maybe a job is the thing that they need to get, and to say, you will be contributing to your phone bill with that job payment, every week or whatever it is. But I think tying something to it often is the only motivator. And we talk about this with young kids, but I think it's true of kids of all ages, that often we're expecting them to be internally motivated when they haven't had the reward that helps with the internal motivation extrinsically. And so I think putting something in place, putting external motivators in place until they start to feel the confidence that comes from having a job, from doing something hard. And then they've learned, plus they've created the neural pathways to help them be able to do it. They've learned, I feel better about my life when I'm doing hard things. I feel better about myself. But sometimes we've got to lead them there and put some boundaries around that.
This episode is brought to you thanks to sponsors like Hiya. Again, with our kids, we want to make sure we're doing the absolute best we can. And I know for mine, whether it's allergies, whether it's sicknesses, I know that I need to prioritize their nutrition, but I often don't know how, especially with teenagers, how to make that happen because I'm not in control of every little thing they eat. Here's the deal. Even if you give your kids some sort of gummy vitamin, you are actually could be giving them up to 7 grams of sugar per serving, lots of additives, petroleum-based dyes. And with Hiya, they take the opposite approach. Zero sugar, zero gummy additives, just clean nutrition. I love that they worked alongside pediatricians and nutrition scientists to create a powerful chewable vitamin that packs a blend of 12 organic fruits and vegetables, plus 15 essential vitamins and minerals in every dose. We're talking about vitamin D, which is so important, B12, C, zinc, folate, all these foundational nutrients that are going to support your child's immune health, brain function, mood regulation, concentration, and the development of strong teeth and bones. And these products, the ingredient list is so clean. It's non-GMO, vegan, dairy-free, allergy-free, gelatin-free, nut-free. They have thought of everything. I personally think it's fantastic. If you have kids 2 and up, Hiya ships your order straight to your door. You get this great reusable bottle that they can even decorate with cute little stickers, and refills they send every month. So it's one less thing to think about. And here's something else I want to tell you about. If you are struggling to get your kids to eat vegetables and it feels like an impossible daily battle, they have a new Kids Daily Greens Plus Superfoods that's a total game changer. It's basically chocolate milk stuffed with veggies. It's a greens powder designed for kids that's packed with 55 plus whole food sourced ingredients. You mix one scoop with milk or milk alternative, and you watch them actually enjoy something that's secretly fueling their growing bodies. We've worked out a special deal with Hiya for their best-selling children's vitamin. Receive 50% off your first order, 50%. To claim this deal, you must go to HiyaHealth.com/DMA. This deal is not available on their regular website. So go to Hiya, it's spelled H-I-Y-A, health, HEALTH.com/DMA, and get your kids the full body nourishment they need to grow into healthy adults. Moms and mentors, you were never meant to whisper truth in a world that shouts lies. The updated and revised In the Bride Wore White by Dana Gresh equips you to speak with clarity and confidence about sexual integrity and God's good design. Rooted in biblical truth and full of grace, this trusted resource helps you start the conversations that matter most and guide the next generation toward healing, wisdom, and a deeper love for Jesus. For over 2 decades and more than 300,000 copies later, this message is still changing lives. Get your copy of And the Bride Wore White today. You can find the link in the show notes. With the subtitle of Strengths, Skills, and Strategies, kind of walk us through how this book is structured. Like if a mom's like thinking about getting a dad, okay, I'm not going to just leave the dads out. Don't dad alone. If they're thinking about getting it, like, how do those three work together? How are they different? How do they complement each other?
Yeah, it's a great question. we start the book out by just talking about the crisis of capability. And Sissy lays out this really great argument that I'm excited for parents to encounter in the first chapter of talking about swings and extremes and thinking about how maybe your parents parented, that if there was an overcorrection that often happens, we talk about how every correction is often an overcorrection, we maybe swung out too far another direction that is a part of what's getting in the way. So we kind of invite parents to think about their journey of being parented, which informed their journey of parenting in this season. And then we define capability. And then one of my favorite parts in the middle is we call it capable connections, where we break down the four significant relationships and how they inform capability. So moms and sons, dads and daughters, dads and sons, moms and daughters, and then move into the strengths, skills, and strategies. And the part that I love the most about those chapters is they're really short. They're super digestible. And we kind of define each one and then go straight into the nuts and bolts of how do we implement it. I mean, we have not just five to 10 practical ideas of how to build that muscle, but also five great questions to be asking your kids along the way that are a part of that development as well.
And then my favorite part of the book, and I never can say this, Heather, we have 100 capability building exercises. It's like she sells seashells by the seashore.
You did it.
In the book, which we had the best time talking about, you know, what we've learned from kids, what we've learned from parents, sitting as therapists all these years. What are things kids can do to grow these muscles? Practical, some are fun, some are deeper, but they're all going to grow good things in them and grow this muscle of capability.
I mean, this is, it's good. Like for the olders, I literally had my 18-year-old go to his doctor's appointment by himself yesterday because I was interviewing someone. And it was good. It was like, are we still at the same place? Do I still go to the same place? Do I? He's like, man, that place has gone downhill. He had all new eyes. He had to ask for a certain vaccine. He had to make sure he got the record because we can send it to the college. Anyway, I do think there is value in, you know, or haircuts. I used to plan his haircuts. Now he has a guy. Well, when that guy gives him a bad haircut, he's not blaming me. It was his choice. He chose that guy. So there's ownership in. No, I think all of these are great. Order pizza for the family, for the middles, order for themselves, pump gas, get babysitter certification, all kinds of things that one of mine was applying for a job for the summer, my 16-year-old, and I was, you know, talking to him and he goes, they're asking for the phone number for the place I worked last summer. How do I know that?
Like, wow.
Okay, well, let's think through. How would you find a phone number? He's like, look at my contacts. And I'm like, okay, well, what if it's a place you don't put in your contacts? How would I know how I find a number? How do you find it? Anyway,
that's so good.
These are things I wouldn't think you wouldn't know. No, you do.
No, because we grew up with phone books. I mean, you had to figure it out. But
I don't know. But like, yeah, that list, y'all, that's worth the price of the book, the whole book. But yes, that's amazing. Okay, but how do strengths, skills, they all start with S's, so that's one common thing. But like, how do they all fit together?
Well, they kind of build on each other. Okay. And we are living in a world, and again, speaking of swings and extremes, we have even in the therapy space seen a lot of swings and extremes. And if there is one thing parents are coming into our offices right now saying, it's my child needs skills. And we certainly believe kids need skills. But skills are retroactive, right? Oh. Skills are reactive.
Reactive, okay.
We want to be proactive. And so that's why we start with strengths, because we want kids to have this foundational knowledge and experience that they can do hard things. And so we picked the five strengths, the five skills, and then the strategies are what help them implement those skills practically. And we picked the ones that we feel like today kids need the most and are lacking significantly.
So I'm going to read the strengths. Competence. Okay.
Thank you for not making us do it because we might not know.
Yeah, you wrote this book a year and a half ago, I'm guessing. Competence, flexibility, perseverance, humility, gratitude are the strengths. Almost like character qualities, basically. Skills would be things that we, like you said, in therapy, talk a lot about. Managing emotions, solving problems, dealing with disappointment, teamwork, moving outward. And then strategies are this reframing, which is a great chunking and goal setting, advocating for themselves and asking for help, scaling, sizing, and shaking off the dust, self-care. And is you are capable of strategy, or that's a statement?
It's kind of the conclusion.
That's like yes. a final. Yes. So talk to me about chunking and goal setting maybe as a strategy.
Talk about the elephant quote and then I'll give some flesh to it.
Yes. The only way to eat an elephant is bite by bite is definitely right. the quote. And
we talk with
we're not eating elephants.
Okay. And we're seeing overwhelming problems and yes. situations. Okay.
And think about it within the story that I shared about the fourth grade boy wants to play in the NFL. Mm. Okay. That's the goal. So what does it look like to break that apart and to set some small, manageable goals on our way to the big goal, which is this rich conversation the dad had with his son, not on the emotional drive to flag football tryouts, I would say, but in a calmer moment where yeah. they kind of map some things out. And then he's going to dissect that even further when they talk about the frustration he experiences playing in the hot months here in Tennessee of practice before a game ever shows up in the fall. And so I think it's so necessary, I'd argue more necessary than ever, that we practice in these ways with kids, because we are a culture who loves a hack. We love a shortcut.
Yeah.
We love a quick detour.
Yeah.
And the reality that we know is to build competence, back to that word, like it takes a lot of habits, not hacks. Mm. You know, when I think about just what it took for me to move into the vocational space I work in now, 1,000 hours, a lot of research that I hated, yes. writing yeah. a bazillion papers, like all
the breaking. You mean I can't become a counselor tomorrow? Pick that up? Okay. Well, I heard it here first. There's a long road. Yeah. No, I mean, a lot of people we see that are successful and then their kids want to be, it took hours and hours. Leanne Morgan, she didn't just
yes,
jump right. up on a stage, you know.
Well, yeah. and I want to highlight, you gave a beautiful picture of that when you made that decision and get his own records. Because what you wisely know is if he were to decide to go to grad school, he's going to have to figure out how to get his transcript to another school. So it's mm-hmm. like that was a breaking down of a skill set he's going to need in place for the long haul.
Yeah. And it's going to be, I mean, it's going to be awkward and he's going to maybe wonder what to do, but I'm still here to answer questions. Kind of. He texted me and I kind of didn't see it, but figured it out. So it's in the same place. Yeah, it is. Talk to us about scaling, sizing, and shaking off the dust. I wouldn't innately know what that's about.
No, you would not. Well, scaling and sizing are based on something we've probably talked about before, how we feel like on a 1 to 10 scale, more kids are at 10, blowing past 10 than ever before. I mean, we are having so many conversations about big feelings in our offices. And so to help kids have a sense of perspective of that most of life really exists in the 2 to 6 range, we've got to help them pull back from 10 and get to a 2 or a 3. And so teaching kids a scale emotionally, hey, tell me in a calmer moment, what would a 10 be for you emotionally? Mm-hmm. And then having them name that out loud. And then sizing is pulling it back to an appropriate size. So you pick your daughter up who lives at 14. She is 14 and lives at 14 emotionally from school. And she says, you know, falls apart. This is the worst day of my entire life. And that you listen with so much empathy. That sounds really hard. You do all that reflective listening. And then what number do you think that might have been on your scale? And the amount of times I have had girls grunt at me and say, ugh, you're right. It felt like a 14, but I guess it was a 7.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of that sense of pulling it back into the right sizing emotion, as Lisa DeMore, yeah. who we probably all love, says. And shaking off the dust comes from a verse in Matthew that Melissa, who is the founder of Daystar, taught at Hopetown. And it's when Jesus sends out the disciples and he says, when you go into a home and you are not well received, you shake the dust off your sandals and you keep going.
Yeah.
And I don't think we're a good dust shaking world anymore. Mm. We linger a lot over resentment. I linger a lot over resentment.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I just had to work through something with another mom and it was sticking with me. And I was like, why am I so I know that her statement about who I am is so not true. I have data points from all these friends that would say otherwise, but this one evaluation, and then you do have to say, well, does what she have, is it true? I don't feel like it is based on all this. Yes. Do I need her approval and acceptance? I mean, no, I don't. So yeah, but she kind of have to like shake it off, be like, okay. Yes. Like my dog does when he doesn't like something I say, he just shakes his head.
Exactly. Like moves on. Yes.
I think it's a neurological thing that dogs do. You guys are with dogs a lot. To like reset, I don't know.
It's a regulating behavior for dogs.
Okay.
And okay. So, yes.
Add that to the list of things we could learn from dogs. And you know what I was thinking, even as we were talking about this, rather than shaking off the dust, I think what this world does now is label it toxic and then cut off that relationship.
Yes. Yeah, it doesn't mean I can't be that person's friend. I just can't take that information and put it as my identity.
Yes.
Yeah. And I would love, Heather, for you to, at dinner, say, I was talking to my friends Sissy and David, and we talked about this verse. And you know, I had to shake off the dust today. I mean, yeah. I wish that would become part of the vernacular in every home, that we're all figuring out what that looks like. I think our world would be different, and we wouldn't have this family estrangement, the statistics on family estrangement right now that we have. These kids who are terminating friendships over the smallest conflict rather than learning to work through it.
Do you find, I know, David, you focus on boys a lot and Sissy with girls, and I know whatever everybody says, but I do think girls and boys can be different on things. In my experience, boys are pretty good at shaking it off and moving on. Like they could be have a huge fight on the basketball court and then be like laughing and hugging it out, getting Sonic the next, you know, 5 minutes. It has to be something real, real big to hold grudges. It used to be. Are you finding that shifting, that boys are holding on to grudges more? Or?
You know, I would say overall, I agree with you that I think that's a particular strength for boys in the context of relationships, that you don't get to see all the evidence of that oftentimes with girls. I will say, Heather, the toxic relationship thing I do see affecting more boys now, and I'm concerned about that because I just didn't see much of any evidence of that on the front side of my work. But I have, you know, I have two friends that I love right now who have young adult and adult sons who've cut off relationship. And so I see the toxic thinking spilling over into the boy space differently than I did at one point, which feels like the evidence of how pervasive it must be in our world, that it's even catching the boys at this point who used to do a better job of that overall. Mm-hmm. But you see a lot of evidence of it with girls, don't you?
Yeah. Of all ages.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that spills into our boys if they're in relationships with girls. And
absolutely.
My husband's view, if two girls are fighting, don't get in the middle. Or then you become the target.
Yes.
Of the situation.
That's good.
Can we talk before we have to go in a couple minutes? Can you just say a last word to the parents? You mentioned in your book the cycle you're seeing where parents themselves are feeling not capable and they're turning to the experts, and they're in this cycle of like, my kid's struggling, I better go seek an expert advice. Okay, yeah, they were right. I don't know what I'm doing. And we just keep, I mean, even this episode itself, it's like we're not trying to be part of that system. We're wanting to equip you that you are capable, mom and dad. Mm. What could you say to them right now? Like they need to know that they have the tools, that they have all of these strengths and skills.
Yes,
and strategies.
Yes. Heather, I haven't even told you this. Two parents this week told me that they went to AI to ask parenting questions.
I do it.
And I think the primary concern there is that AI offers a lot of intelligence, but it doesn't offer wisdom. Mm. And I also, what happens for me with a GPS system is that I have certain friends that I can't figure out how to get to their house. And so I use GPS. I've never learned how to get to their house. And if I would turn it off, I would learn to trust myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we are seeing more parents than ever before abdicate to experts. And David and I would say really strongly right now that we think experts are making things worse. That some of the things a lot of experts are saying to parents are only increasing anxiety, are only making them doubt themselves. And so we are telling parents, we want you to listen to two voices. Don't Mom Alone certainly being a place that you go, but pick two voices that you trust in the parenting space And they need to be voices that help you give yourself more grace and help you trust your intuition, because God speaks to you about your child, not to the experts. And you are the only expert when it comes to your child.
Yeah. That's good. David, anything? One last word on that?
No, I just think, echoing what Sissy said, I think so many of those voices are moving parents deeper into fear and shame.
Yeah.
And if that's the primary takeaway you're experiencing, then I want you to stop following that person. I want you to stop listening. And let that be a barometer for how you measure the voices you bring in. I laughed with my wife yesterday and said, the only two people who are going to get to boss me around anymore are you and Cece Winans. That's it. Any other voices bossing me around, I'm not interested in right now.
Okay.
Because I think so many voices in this world are barking and bossing. Mm. I think that's the primary way of communicating.
Yeah, when you're on that scroll and you just start feeling feelings, you know, it's like paying attention.
Mm. Yeah.
But paying attention, like, when do I start feeling more anxious about my kid's journey? Is it when I hang out with that group? Is it when I'm hearing these quotes from this one person, you know, or is it when I'm quiet with God and he's, because God will bring to mind things that you need to go check that phone or go ask that kid, that you're right. AI can't give you that nudge, that Holy Spirit nudge. So, we're thankful for y'all. I know you've got to go on to do all the things, including a book tour. I mean, and there's a kids companion book, a workbook. Is this right?
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that, because we'll link to that in the show notes.
We're super excited. It's coming out in May, called I Am Capable. And we break down the strengths, skills, and strategies in language for kids and really fun practices. Like, we laughed our way through writing that workbook.
Did.
We had a ball and thinking up different experiences that kids could do with their parents. There's a lot of family experiments in that we think will make for enjoyable learning. That's our hope.
That's awesome. Well, what ages did you say for that?
Six to 12.
Yeah.
Roughly.
Yeah.
Okay. Could modify for younger, still work for a few olders too. Mm-hmm.
And if a parent who has, like, let's say a teenager and they feel like they've already screwed up, could they pick up this book and be encouraged for those, you know, last 4 years they have a kid home, or is it too late?
Absolutely. Never too late.
No.
Never too late. For college kids, I don't think it's too late, because a lot of college kids aren't learning these skills.
Yeah. Yeah. Just because they're supposed to go to college may not be ready.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you all for joining me once again. You all go check out everything Sissy and David. They have a great podcast. If you need, your one other voice can be me and them. That's your allowable amount. But thank you so much for joining me. Love, 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 always time with you.
We love time with you, friend.
Yes.
I love that they didn't just write a book for us, but they also created that guide for kids, a workbook for ages 6 to 12. Go check that out in the show notes. I'm going to pray over us, for us as parents, as we navigate all of these things. Lord, I know you see our hearts and you see our love for our kids and our desire to do this job well. I also know that you see the anxiety and stress and overwhelm that we feel that kind of shuts us down and that may cause us to do more harm than help in our parenting. And I pray, Lord, that you would give us the strength to sit in discomfort with our kids, to say the things that may not lead to happiness and joy, but to challenge and to risk. And Lord, I pray that we would be wise in who we listen to, so that we can hear your voice loudest when it comes to our parenting. I pray that you would just know my child for the current situation they are in, and what you long for me to do in guiding and supporting them to be all that you created them to be in the world that they are in now, a world that is changing, and to not go into every day with fear of all the uncertainties, but to go with confidence because we know you go before us and that nothing is a surprise to you, God. I pray for peace to just overwhelm the hearts and minds of parents who are listening right now. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. Okay. Well, I will see you back here next week. I have another great guest that I've already recorded. And the irony is, you know how David and Sissy were saying, don't turn to AI for parenting, which I was like, I've done that. I have a great gal who's joining us from Hope for the Heart, and she is sharing a biblically based AI tool. I know. We talk about all the things. So join me back here next week for that conversation with Haley Scully. Have a good one. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Don't Mom Alone podcast. If you're wanting to connect with more people and more resources to help remind you that you're not alone, head over to don'tmomalone.com. That's where you'll also find show notes with any links mentioned by our guests. Most importantly, I want you to know the good news, the great news that you're not alone because God has promised to always be with you. With faith in Jesus Christ, the one who died for you and rose again, Jesus said when he left, he was going to leave a helper, a comforter, to be with us. God in us. Moms, that's superpower. So while you're washing dishes at your kitchen sink, while you're driving to and from work, while you're feeding that baby late into the night, while you're cleaning sticky floors, God promises to be just as present with you as when you're worshiping in a church pew. As it says in Zephaniah 3:17, the Lord your God is with you. He is mighty to save. He takes great delight in you. He will quiet you with his love, and he will rejoice over you with singing. Now that's good news. Have a great day.